Mr. Corden, Reel 4. We're talking about when you'd moved to London to join the 88th Heavy ACAC Regiment, Lloyd's, and you were with RHQ, the MT section.
Yes.
Now, what did the MT section consist of at that time?
Well, there would be, in RHQ, I think there was about 20 vehicles altogether, including four North Satters, because the dispatch riders were really RHQ, but they were spread out to the batteries, one to each battery, one more battery.
And what is RHQ?
Which was the RSM's transport, but he never got to use it. Not in England, that one, not that particular regiment. Anyway, how I got to join the 88th was because just after the Dunkirk epic, they massed the ACAC all around the south, expecting. The Hitler coming straight over the channel, which he never did. But when they found out that wasn't taking place, they spread it more along the coast rather than covering London. And from Hyde Park, after one or two stations in Hyde Park, I think it was near Walthamstow on the North Circle Road, which goes through Walthamstow, another occasion Finsbury Park, another occasion Clapham Park. And those two last ones, we only stayed, I think, about two nights. North Circle Road was there must be about a fortnight. And that's when the scare was that we were probably going into France to follow up the attack lower down France, away from Dunkirk. But anyway, it didn't materialise, as we all know.
Now, you say you had 20 vehicles. Besides the motorbikes, what were they?
The CO's car, which was a Humber Snipe. Never forget that. First time I'd ever worked on a Humber Snipe. But anyway, and then there was two clerical cars, small Austin cars, had been camouflaged. There was civilian cars being camouflaged. Four, five, 30 tonners, and I think four 3 tonners, which carried the quartermaster stuff. We're nothing as regards.
30 hundredweight?
Yeah, 30 hundredweight.
And what make were they?
Chiefly Bedfords.
And the 3 tonners were?
The 3 tonners were chiefly Bedfords.
And what did you think of the Bedford lorries?
Oh, well, they were great for me working on them, because they were so easy to work on.
In what way?
Repairs. I'm talking about repairs and getting to the engine, and the spare parts were easily accessible. But if we got an American vehicle, I mean, we were lost for parts because we had no parts in England from at that time. But we had English vehicles there and then.
Did you have a maintenance routine? You know, jobs that you had to do on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly base.
Yes. Well, that was teaching the drivers to make sure there's oil, and water.
That was daily, was it?
Petrol and water, that was definitely daily, petrol and water. That was the driver's consideration, and I got to make sure they did it. So at that time I was made a Lance Bombardier.
So that was one thing you had to check. What else were you? Any weekly jobs?
Yes, if I chanced, I had to take one off the road to make sure that I was always one to go through, right through from one end to the other. And when I did one, probably 2 or 3 days, or probably less, and what if I found anything, put that back in circulation and get another one off. That's when they were stationary, because you couldn't go out of the sun, of course. Because when they were stationary, that's the only time you can get them probably empty.
Would you take the whole engine to bits?
No. Never did the decarbonisation, because, I mean, it was too long to put it back together again.
So what would you do?
Check for decarbonisation. If the engine was really bad and I couldn't do nothing with it, that was reported to RALC. Exchange vehicle.
So what would you check?
Brakes, specifically, clutch. Could adjust the clutches, could replace the clutches, could replace the brakes, because that was a straightforward job, but anything to dismantle the engine, we weren't really allowed to do it at that stage. It's invariable, there were new vehicles, so they didn't need a lot of major overhauls. Tyres, we carried a load of tyres. Bolts for the lights, which immaterial because the lights are on his slits and the headlamps those days.
Anything else?
We want to make sure that the major oils that the drivers didn't have to do, that's the transmission oils. So there were two or three different transmissions on the vehicles in them days. It's quite different today. And we carried so much oil, of course. And we could pick oil up from the petrol depots. We have a depot for petrol, pick oil up there. But we carried so much engine oil, so much gear oil. There's two types of gear oil we carried, one type of engine oil.
Now, so that was one part of your duties, was a sort of overhauling thing. What other duties would you have in the MT section?
I never did guard duty so much because there were always plenty of others, but I did fire duties, which was the guard duties. You were dressed specifically for guards, and most of the RHQ staff were relieved of guard duties because they had so many little jobs to do. So if there's occasion to have a major guard on the RHQ, that came each battalion in turn, each company sent so many guards. If there weren't enough of the major guard duties for the major guard duties, they came from the companies.
Any other duties you had?
No. Just as I know.
How many men were there in the section?
Well, in the MT section, RHQ, there'd be about 20 altogether. But in the old battalion, there'd roughly be probably 30 or 40 at each battery, because they've got the matadors. They had their own 30 tonners and 30 underweights, and they had one car each for the company commanders, one of these private cars.
So they had their own MT sections?
They had their own MT sections, but if there's anything to be dealt with majorly, it was me that was sent on the course to get it, so I was sent somewhere for a couple of days, and then I used to transmit it to those as we go out to the batteries for a few hours to transmit it to them. So as we'll find out later on.
Were there any raids while you were in London that you remember? Air raids?
Well, the asylum went a few times. I was never in particular in the bombs in London, because after Dunkirk, there was a spell. I think it must have been while he reorganised himself, because they all expected London to be really fresh, after it wasn't. And we were staying around about the London area, must have been about 5 weeks altogether, no more. And then they moved us out, and we went out to South Wales, to Newport.
And where were you based there?
At Newport, a place just outside Newport, at Christchurch. And the guns were on the hill in each case, and they were there chiefly for the defence of Bristol. And the RHQ was with one of the gun sites, and we hadn't been there long before we got all the ammunition. It was there, must have been there quite a few months, because we got quite a hammering. We were there, so well after Christmas of 41.
So you went there about July, you'd say?
Yes, that's right. We went there soon after July. And
where were you billeted?
We was on the canvas, mostly. There was one hut on the site, and two huts. One was a canteen, and was the mess room. And the canteen was only a small hut. But there was Nissen huts. You know, the complete big Nissen huts, which all the shells were in, and half a dozen MTE men, we slept on the shell boxes in there. No smoking light, but they were up in there. Of course it was safe because there were no fuse or anything like that. They were safe unless there were a fire, of course. Until we had quite a few raids, and we had occasionally a couple of bombs up near us. In fact, a little piece of one of the bombs in my cabinet in there, because he dropped in my head, in my helmet. I don't know if I picked the right one up, but next morning I went to where I was stood, because we was helping the gunners.
What were you doing to help them?
Loading the guns, or carrying the shells to the one that was loading in the actual breach. But because we wasn't, we were getting away with them, so we used to do the carrying. Because I mean, we had a lot of firing that session at Bristol, a lot of firing. Because it wasn't only Bristol. It wasn't only Bristol that were bombing, and they were coming in droves. They dropped one or two at Bristol some days, some nights, and then followed the seven up. Right, well, the seven were to come back to Midland, didn't it? So that's when they went to the Coventry, Birmingham, and all that. And went to Liverpool. All followed the seven up. Because in the night, as you can understand, you see the river. You can't see nothing else, you can see the river. If there's a glimmer of moonlight, the river was definitely in view. So they used to fox people by coming up over to Bristol, dropped one or two bombs, thinking Bristol would be covered, but they carried on, most of them.
So would you stay up? I mean, how often were these raids?
Every night. Almost every night there was some airplanes coming over. Not always bombers, some probably for reconnaissance or going away from us and not coming near Bristol at all, because we got them in that ground outspit, the radar. But it was so hectic, everybody out. And eventually, after these bombs were dropped, because it was lots of rain at the time, the MT section was moved from there. All the guns were left there, but myself and all the MT section moved to a village, Killian, the old Roman village, just on the mouth of the Uskazit. Yeah. Well, about 6 miles, 6, 7 miles away from Christchurch. And that was a gun site, but it'd never been occupied, never been a gun zone. It's been built early in the war. I think it had been built and then cancelled because of the Roman village being there. It was never used as a gun site. And the folks were there, so we was in glory. I was the mechanic, cook, bottle washer, in charge of guard, everything, every night and every day. And the lorries used to come and stop there all night, the driver was there. But if they were required of the gun site or take food and things like that, it was dealt with. I didn't give the orders, the quartermaster gave them the orders. I just looked after the lorries as they come in, and most of them done after tea because they were out in daylight, it was nearly always dark or the opposite part of town. There was one interesting thing while we was there, interesting.
You went there about December,
we were definitely there over Christmas, because the village looked after us at Christmas, it was the MT section. We all safe coppers were to buy a bottle of whiskey. We intended doing a pub crawl, because we could go out, you see, with the gunners. When he was on the gun side, in those days, you couldn't go out just when you wanted, like you can now. You had to wait while your name was on the gun squad. And that was probably about once every fortnight, something like that. But anyway, we stopped, we was there over Christmas, and the villagers looked after us, definitely looked after us. We clubbed up, bought a bottle of whiskey. I was put in charge of a bottle of whiskey. We started the cook crawl. We started at one pub nearest to the gun site where we were billeted, and went around the village. I think it must have been about six pubs in this village, and finished at the last one at the entrance to the village. We were at the first one, we won 200 box cigarettes one in a raffle and entered sometime in the past few weeks, Christmas raffle, and a box of chocolates, so we had a good start. Anyway, we all finished up well weathered. It was always time to climb back up the camp. When we got in camp, there's a couple that had been left on fire duty. They couldn't understand what we were going to go back like. All the beds had been put on the floor, but not just flat on, front end disconnected, because we were in beds at that time, so it was a proper barrack room. Front end disconnected and bed sloping that way. Back end disconnected on some and sloping that way as well. It didn't matter, so we got to sleep. But I think we all went back to the camp next day. We got to go back to the camp for Christmas dinner.
The main camp?
Main camp, Double Hill at Christchurch. And we went back there and we were well worse for wear, all of us. In fact, I think it's the first time I've been well worse for wear. But anyway, we got back there and what followed us in, so remember, it was a Lloyds of London. Some commissionaire at Lloyds had sent about six crates of Benedictine. And the table set out, this was Christmas, we were well set the table out somewhere. And the table was set out, and a bottle of beer, a put everybody on the table, and the officers and sergeants always did the waitress in at Christmas Day, as you probably know. This Drake came from the station with these officers and crates of Bendicino, you know, so that they were put about one between six persons. So I guess we were well lathered before we got there, and but we drank ourselves sober, I think. Oh, and it was free beer in the canteen, this little bit of a booklet that was a canteen, it was free beer there. Well, we'd invitation down back in the village for an evening of entertainment at 6 o'clock, tea and everything. Well, we could say we were all sober by the time we went there, and they looked after us, the village. They provided tea for us with them, and their dance and everything. And it was quite a happy time there.
You got on well with the locals,
yes,
obviously.
Yes, I got on well with the locals, and I got on well with the people in Newport, because you see, in the camp, you couldn't do much writing with the noise, and we were in this Manisnuts, this ammunition shed, and we never stopped in there much, we went in there to sleep. No lights in, you see, so we couldn't do much writing. So, on our day, on my day off, when my name was on the board, some lads wouldn't go, so he could swap. So I probably got two, decided that was most of them doing. I used to go to the Church Army, Salvation Army, churches themselves, because you provide writing paper and envelopes, places to sit, rest, read, and do what you wanted. And I used to write all my letters in Newport. And I got to know one or two people that went to the church, to the same church, and I got to know the people. And I come across a couple, and the husband was a Yorkshireman. So, because they were all right, she was Welsh and he was Yorkshire, all about all the other way around, one way anyway. And we got to know them, and they took me to their house. So I had to go to their house on my way to, because it was a near Christchurch. And they took me to their home regularly. Then after that, every time I was in, I got to contact them somehow. And we got really attached. And I took one of my pals there, and he was a very shy. A young fellow, this big fellow, but very shy. And the last I heard of him, later on, when after I left that district, he married the daughter, and he got killed in the Middle East, unfortunately.
No.
Anyway, thinking on with Newport, the people in Newport, they were glorious to us. They helped us every way they could. And it was a godsend. We got a nice picture place there as well. I just got the pictures there. And with all the hammering they got at Bristol, they got some at Newport as well. So they realised that our guns were looking after them. So the churches sent word up to the gun side, if anybody, any of the soldiers want to come and spend their Sunday or the weekend with them, they could do. And the churches sent a list of houses up, nominated themselves to have us for the weekend, because they knew we were living in tents and in amongst the mud, and they'd do us washing while we were there, and just let them rest. If you want to stop in bed all day, they'd let us stop in bed all day. If you want to go to the church, they'd go to the church with them. Well, quite a few were a bit dicey about it, but I took it up straight away, another friend of mine. We took it up straight away, me and this pal. And anyway, there were always so many, and if they didn't want to go, it was open for anybody else. So if any vacancies, me and my pal went. So instead of going once every 3 or 4 weeks, we probably went nearly every week. Saturday till Sunday night. And came back, we got to be back in the camp for 8 o'clock Sunday night. Well, they fed us if we want to stay in. If we want to go out, they let us go out. They didn't stop us doing anything we wanted to do. But of course, me and this lad, we liked to go to church, so we went to church every Sunday with them, and then set to after them, because we wandered down, probably went to the pictures in the afternoon, because church would be open on Sunday pictures for us. And they looked after us in Newport very well, so I remember Newport. Anyway, moving on from Newport, we went up to Gloucester.
I thought you went on a course first.
Did I go from Newport? Have I got from Newport there?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. How you remember it anyway? This is the one at Haslam Barracks, School of Electrical Lighting.
I thought we'd gone to Gloucester first.
Okay, well, tell us what happened at Gloucester.
Well, at Gloucester, that's where I went on the course. And as I say, I went from Gloucester to Haslam Barracks. And it was a long course. And it was a course for motor vehicles and gun fitting. And Haslam Barracks was an old-time fortress of donkey's years old, I think it is, but still very comfortable. And a long way to get to it. You had to walk right through the submarine pens and all that, because there were no buses or anything like that that went through, allowed to go through. And the barracks itself was right on the edge of the... Well, if you fell out of the barrack window, you fell in the sea. That's how near it was, of course. But it was quite comfortable. And I think it was 3 months we was there. And the sergeant in charge of the hours part of the course was an old ex-army man, well, pre-war soldier, who'd gone through all these courses, and it'd taken him years, probably an apprenticeship like I was doing, but not 5 years like we were doing, but he knew everything there was about a vehicle, and it threw it all over to us, so I learned a lot more about the vehicles like everybody else, and we didn't go out very often from there because it was such a long walk to get into Gosport. We stayed inside the barracks and entertained ourselves. There was no garrison theatre or anything like that there. But we did go into Portsmouth and Gosport on the Saturday or the Sunday. We always went in on the Saturday or Sunday. So there again, we had our own fire duties. There was no specific guard, it was all fire duties there. And I forget how many there were there, but there was at least three sections going on at the same time from different parts of the barracks. And as I say, it was called the School of Electric Lighting. Funny name, it was because it was a searchlight depot. That's how it comes to be that. Well, apart from the searchlight depot, it was turned over to teaching mechanics. Well, from there, we went to Gloucester. Back to Gloucester again, but this time, private billets, and was going to technical school. We were there about 3 months as well. And because we were there at Easter, we wasn't allowed to go home at Easter, as usual, like I told you, so we weren't allowed to travel in the train. No passes given. We were if we wanted, but no passes given. And of course, we couldn't afford to go on the train without the pass. And we were in private billets, three of us. One definitely came from Sheffield, and I think the other one came from Newcastle. Well, he wasn't very anxious to go home from Newcastle, but this one from Sheffield, he brought his wife down, and he arranged him and the lady next door. He had next door, and he brought his wife down. Well, that just wasn't legal in our place. See? And there was a lad, one of their lads was 18. He was going to college. The youngest one was 12. He was saying, yes. He thought we were marvellous, having a soldier billet in the house. He thought it was great. Their name was Dance, strange to say. But anyway, we'd about a mile to go from that billet to the technical school. And we used to go walk through the park. And one afternoon, the park and the technical school were machine gunned and bombed. I think there were 7 bombs dropped in the park. I forget whether it was injured, killed or anything, but the bombs were dropped in the park and we were machine gunned. The technical school outhouses, we were in the outhouses, they were machine gunned. But after that, we was allowed home after Easter, the week after Easter, could never pass. Well, I went home that week after Easter and I got engaged that particular weekend.
What made you decide to do that then?
Well, I think it's because we thought we'd been caught in 3 years or more, then just, you know, don't know what brought us on entirely. We was going to get engaged when I came in army, but it was put off. We were talked out of it both by her mother and my mother, for some reason, or by her brother, because he was an ex-army after the First World War. And anyway, I decided to get engaged. We decided to get engaged and got engaged quite for now. And when we got back, the lady at the house bought us a present, an engagement present. And I remember that. It was a Ice and Sugar Shaker, a shaking ice sugar over buns and things like that. Where it is now, it's some, probably somewhere in the cabinet behind me. But anyway, we stayed there about another fortnight, 3 weeks after then.
That's till the end of April, I think.
Yeah, till the end of April. And from there, we went up to Leeds, of all places. So it was nice to go near, first ever been near home. It's still far enough away, but it was nice to be near. And we went into a billets, a private billets again, right next door to Armley Jail. There were five soldiers and five wardens. And this old lady, and the, she had a maid working with her. Well, we call her a maid, but... and she'd done this, what she was doing now. She'd done it in the First World War. She, guess how old she was. She was getting on this old lady, but she was... She had a heart of gold, and she laid down the iron rod, no doubt about it, because you know all the... She knew all the nooks and crannies, knew all the tricks, and same with the wardens. The wardens didn't get away with anything either. But she was as good as gold, and she looked after us there. And while I was there, we got married. There on May the 31st, got married. So the week before, I got leave to go home, a fortnight before, I got leave to go home for the weekend, because I couldn't afford to go without getting the pass, and made the arrangements, and then the wife come to Leeds on the weekend before I got married, and finalised the arrangements, and now I got a weekend pass to get married. Not a week, couldn't have a week, I had a weekend pass. I got me back at the school on the Monday. Anyway, when the wife came over on the Sunday before, and we went into Roundy Park, because I knew Roundy Park. I'd never been there before, but I knew Roundy Park from living nearby, and so we went there. So we spent that day then. I took up the train and came back home. I went home on the Friday night, and my best man was still somewhere down south. My brother, John, that was in the Durham's. So by 10 o'clock, I had to go down with the other brothers to find one for the best man on the Saturday. And I got to my next eldest brother. He wasn't in the army at all. And was there. I remained all the way, so he was the best man. And knocked on the door, and John walked in. He'd walked home from Doncaster. Couldn't get home. It was a little training. John getting home, you see, from Winchester, I think it was that. And he had to walk. At the walk from Doncaster, and he called at my mother's before he went to his own home. He came to my mother before he got. And my mother just told him where he'd come to this brother, so he came up to me, and everything were all right. Everything went up all right after that. Lovely weekend. Took wife back, and we had to remain at Bradford at my auntie's. And wife used to come down at lunchtime, at our break time at this garage. Across the road was a park, bowling green, we'd sit watching the play balls. Well, after I'd been there, of course, because at this garage, it was intensive work there. Right through the centre of the garage to the ceiling was wire netting and fencing. Because at the other side, girls were doing munitions. We were pulling engines to pieces, definitely pulling to pieces and rebuilding them. All types of vehicles, just the engine plunked on a standard. And these girls making munitions, mostly bullets, at the other side of the fence. Well, I guess we could lie. Backers and forwards. But anyway, we had dinner before them. We were marched down to a laundry about 800 yards down the road. A big laundry, it was a big canteen. And we used to have a hot meal there. And then we were free to go. So I had to march down with the others at mid dinner. Then I used to go into parks at wife. Others just wandered there, some come in park as well, but I went in and wife went to me every day. But the funny part about it, when I brought wife over, I had to report to Diggs to make sure I was back, you see, because she was covering for me while I was in Bradford. So my aunt lived at Bradford, and I used to go up to sleep at Bradford, of course. So I had to report there, and wife wouldn't go in kitchen to meet with the soldiers. She stopped in the room, had a cup of tea and a bun, because shy, I expect, after just being married, but she wouldn't go in to meet them. Anyway, so I used to go to, if wife didn't come, she didn't come to meet me once, because she says, I went to go around breakfast. So I says, rather than come down, I'll meet you at bus stop and breakfast. So I went on the bus that day, all the times. She came to meet me and went round Leeds, because she could go around breakfast herself, you see. But anyway, she'd be up by the Lark about 5:30, catching one of the first trams from Bradford to Leeds, drop off at Darmley, and go up.